All right, let's jump right in. We're going deep on the Bible today.
Okay.
We've got a whole stack of lectures from Dr. Dave Matthewson all about how to really understand what we're reading.
Right. Yeah.
He calls it like hermeneutics, but basically it's like reading the Bible with the right lens on, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. It's about understanding the Bible through its literary context.
Right. And that's what we're diving deep into today. Literary context,
why
it matters. Because Matthewson argues that, you know, just taking a verse out of context, it's
absolutely.
Like you get a totally different meaning sometimes, right?
It's almost like you can make the Bible say whatever you want if you take verses out of context.
Exactly. And Matthewson uses some really interesting examples.
Yeah.
Like even Moses, you know, parting the Red Sea, all that.
Right.
But then Matthewson points out these moments where
right.
Moses isn't quite the superhero we might imagine.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. A lot of people, you know, picture Moses as this like superhuman leader. But in those early chapters of Exodus, you see a different side to him.
Yeah. Like Exodus 17 and 18, he's like totally overwhelmed by judging all these disputes among the Israelites.
Yeah, he is. He can't even handle it, really. Yeah. He's just one guy. And his father-in-law, Jethro, has to come in and say, look, you're going to burn out. You need a system.
Right. And Matthewson makes this point that it's not just about showing Moses as like relatable or human or whatever.
Right.
He's actually saying it's, well, how does he put it?
Well, think about it. The Israelites have just escaped from slavery in Egypt.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're constantly questioning, is God really with us?
Oh.
Right? And so Matthewson suggests that by showing Moses' limitations,
yeah.
the narrative is subtly answering that question. It's saying, look, the victories aren't because of Moses. They're because of God working through him even when he's weak.
That's a great point. I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, it's a really interesting take on those stories. And it shows how much we can miss if we just focus on a single verse or a single character without considering the bigger picture.
Okay. So it's not just about Moses then. It's about understanding what the whole passage is doing, right?
Exactly. We need to ask ourselves, what's the point of this story? What's it trying to teach us?
So how do we do that? Like, what questions should we be asking when we're reading?
Well, Matthewson talks about looking at what comes before and after a passage.
Okay, yeah.
And asking, how does it connect? What would be missing if this part wasn't here? What role does it play in the overall flow of thought?
So we can't just, like, pick our favorite verses and ignore the rest.
No, definitely not. It's like trying to understand a joke by just hearing the punchline.
Right.
You need the whole setup to get it.
Okay, that makes sense. So give me an example. How does this work in practice?
All right, let's take Psalm 15.
Okay.
On the surface, it just looks like a list of virtues, right?
Yeah.
Be honest, keep your promises, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah. Pretty straightforward.
Right. But if you look at the very first verse, it asks a question. Lord, who may dwell in your sanctuary, who may live on your holy hill?
Oh, interesting. So it's not just a random list of good deeds.
Exactly. That question changes everything. It turns the list of virtues into an answer. It's describing the character of someone who's worthy to be in God's presence.
Ah, so the context gives it a whole new meaning.
Exactly. And that's what's so exciting about paying attention to literary context. We start to see these layers of meaning that we might have missed otherwise.
It's like you're saying, don't just read the words, understand the conversation.
Exactly. And that conversation can be incredibly rich and insightful. It can even challenge our assumptions about passages we think we know well.
Okay, now you've got me curious. Give me an example. What kind of assumptions are we talking about?
Well, think about 1 Corinthians 13.
The love chapter.
Yes. The one everyone reads at weddings. It's beautiful on its own, right? But do you know where it actually sits in Paul's letter to the Corinthians?
Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
I've always wondered about that, to be honest.
It is in the middle. And that placement is really important. Because chapters 12 and 14, right before and after it, they're all about spiritual gifts. Specifically, how the Corinthians are misusing them.
Like showing off?
Yeah. They're all about speaking in tongues, but they're not using it to build each other up.
Gotcha. So Paul's like, hey, love is more important than your fancy spiritual gifts.
That's part of it, yeah. But Matthewson argues there's even more to it than that. He says chapter 13 is describing the kind of love that would lead them to use their gifts properly in the first place.
Okay, so it's not just about romantic love.
Right. It's about a selfless love that puts others first, that considers the good of the whole community.
So it's like the love chapter is actually a guide for how to live out your faith in a way that benefits everyone.
Exactly. And that's a message we might miss if we just read it in isolation.
This is blowing my mind. I'm starting to think I need to reread the entire Bible with this context lens on.
I think we all could benefit from that. It's amazing how much we can miss when we don't pay attention to the bigger picture. And we're just getting started. There are so many more fascinating examples of how this approach can illuminate the Bible.
Well, I'm definitely hooked. Let's keep going.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so we've been talking about, like, understanding individual passages in their context.
Right.
But what about when the New Testament quotes the Old Testament?
Yes. That's a whole other layer of context to consider, because sometimes those quotes,
right,
they can feel a bit like a secret code, you know?
Totally. Like, I know I'm supposed to see some connection to Jesus, but I'm not always sure I'm getting it.
Yeah, it's not enough to just find the verse in the Old Testament.
Right.
We need to understand how and why the New Testament writers are using it. What are they trying to say?
So it's like there's a deeper meaning behind the quote itself.
Exactly. Mathieson points out that there are different ways the New Testament writers use the Old Testament. Sometimes it's a very direct fulfillment of a prophecy, like, this is exactly what the prophet predicted.
Right.
But other times, it's more subtle.
Okay, yeah.
And we need to really dig into the meaning and the historical context of the original passage.
I'm all about digging. Give me an example.
All right, let's look at Matthew 1.23.
Okay.
It says, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel.
Right.
Which means God with us.
Right, God with us. And that's a quote from Isaiah.
It is, Isaiah 7.14.
Yeah, okay. So that's like a classic prophecy about Jesus.
Yes. But if we only read Matthew's quote, we might miss some of the nuances of what Isaiah was originally saying.
Oh, interesting. So there's more to it than just like, this verse predicts Jesus.
Exactly. So imagine you're living in Isaiah's time. The kingdom of Judah is facing all these threats.
Oh, yeah.
They're surrounded by enemies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was pretty scary time.
Right. And so Isaiah comes along and gives King Ahaz this message of hope. He's basically saying, God is with you. He's going to protect you.
Right.
And the sign of that protection is the birth of a child who will be called Emmanuel, meaning God is with us.
So was Isaiah talking about a specific child back then?
Most likely, yes. A lot of scholars think he was referring to a royal son who would be born soon.
Okay.
But then centuries later,
yeah,
Matthew comes along and he sees this prophecy as pointing forward to Jesus.
Right.
He's saying that Jesus is the ultimate Emmanuel.
The ultimate God with us.
Exactly. The one who fully embodies God's presence among his people.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Matthew isn't just quoting Isaiah randomly.
Right.
He's using that prophecy to make a theological point about Jesus.
Exactly. And that's what's so cool about these New Testament quotes.
Yeah.
They're not just proof texts. They're actually adding layers of meaning and revealing deeper truths about who Jesus is and what he came to do.
Okay, that's really helpful. So sometimes it's a direct fulfillment, like with Isaiah.
Right.
What are some other ways the New Testament writers use the Old Testament?
Well, sometimes they use it to make a point that goes beyond the original meaning of the passage.
Hmm. Okay. So it's not just about predicting Jesus or something like that.
Right. It's more like they're taking a familiar song and creating a remix.
Okay. I like that analogy. So give me an example of like a biblical remix.
All right. Let's look at Galatians.
Okay.
In chapter 3, verse 13, Paul quotes Deuteronomy 21.23.
Okay.
That verse in Deuteronomy, it's talking about the shame of being executed as a criminal.
Oh, wow. Heavy stuff.
Right. It says, cursed is everyone who is hung on a pole.
Yeah, not exactly something you'd want to put on a t-shirt.
No, definitely not. But here's what Paul does. He takes this verse about a cursed criminal.
Yeah.
And he applies it to Jesus.
Wow. Okay, how does that work?
He says, Christ redeemed us from the curse of the law by becoming a curse for us, for it is written, cursed is everyone who is hung on a pole.
So he's saying that Jesus took on the curse that we deserved.
Exactly. Paul is using this Old Testament image to explain the significance of Jesus's death.
Wow. It's like Jesus took our place then.
Right. He took on the weight of our sin and set us free from condemnation. And he's doing it by connecting it back to this Old Testament passage.
It's like he's giving that verse a whole new meaning.
Exactly. It's a powerful example of how the New Testament writers can take an Old Testament passage and use it to illuminate something new about Jesus and the gospel.
This is making me realize that I need to pay way more attention to those Old Testament quotes.
I think we all do. There's so much depth there, and we've only just scratched the surface.
Okay, so we've got those direct fulfillments, like with Isaiah.
Right.
And then these, like, remixes where the meaning gets expanded, like with Paul.
Exactly.
Is there anything else we should keep in mind when we're you know, trying to understand these quotes.
Well, remember earlier we talked about the Septuagint?
Yeah, the Greek translation of the Old Testament.
Right. Well, sometimes the New Testament writers are quoting from the Septuagint instead of the original Hebrew.
Oh, okay. So does that make a difference?
It can. Sometimes there are subtle differences in wording or emphasis between the Hebrew and the Greek.
Ah, so knowing which version they're quoting from can help us understand their interpretation.
Exactly. And even more importantly, we need to consider the big picture.
Okay.
What's the overall message the New Testament writer is trying to convey? How does this quote fit into their argument?
So it's like putting together a puzzle.
Yes. We need to see how all the pieces, including those Old Testament quotes, fit together to create the complete picture.
This is way more interesting than just reading a verse here and there.
I know, right? It's a real journey of discovery. And the more we understand how the New Testament writers use the Old Testament, the more we appreciate the unity and depth of God's word.
It's like they're saying, hey, this story's been going on for a long time and it all points to Jesus.
Exactly. It's a beautiful tapestry woven together from all these different threads.
This has been eye-opening, but I have a feeling we're not done yet. What else do we need to know about approaching the Bible through this lens of literary context?
Well, there's one more big piece to consider.
Okay, I'm ready. Hit me with it.
Okay.
Hit me with it. What's this last piece of the puzzle?
Well, it's about recognizing that the Bible has been used to justify some pretty terrible things throughout history.
Yeah, I've definitely thought about that. Like slavery, oppression, you name it. People have twisted the Bible to support all sorts of awful things.
It's true. And that's why it's so important to understand the historical and cultural contexts in which it was written. We can't just read it through our own modern lens.
So we have to remember that it was written thousands of years ago to a very different culture.
Exactly. It's like trying to understand a joke from another culture. You might completely miss the point if you don't get the cultural references or the way humor works in that context.
Okay, that makes sense. So with the Bible, we need to ask, like, what did this passage mean to the people who first heard it?
Right. What were their cultural norms? What were their assumptions about the world? And how might that be different from our own assumptions?
Yeah, that's a good point. So how do we avoid, like, falling into that trap of misinterpreting the Bible and using it to justify harmful actions?
Well, one thing that's really helpful is to be aware of the literary genre you're reading.
Okay.
Is it poetry, prophecy, historical narrative, a letter?
Right. Like, those are all different ways of communicating, right?
Exactly. Each genre has its own unique rules and conventions. We wouldn't interpret a poem literally in the same way we would a historical account.
Yeah, that would be weird. So it's about paying attention to the form as well as the content. What else should we keep in mind?
It's crucial to be aware of the overarching themes and values of the Bible as a whole.
Like, what are the big ideas that run throughout Scripture?
Exactly. For example, the Bible consistently emphasizes the dignity and worth of all people, regardless of their background. So any interpretation that contradicts that fundamental principle is probably off base.
That's a really good point. It's like having a compass to help us stay on track. But sometimes I think even with good intentions, we can still misinterpret things, you know? What's the best way to guard against that?
Engaging with a diversity of perspectives is so important. Don't just rely on a single source or interpretation. Read commentaries, listen to sermons from different traditions, discuss challenging passages with people who have different viewpoints.
Okay, so, like, don't just stay in your own bubble.
Exactly. It can really help you see things you might have missed on your own.
That's like having a whole team of detectives working on the case, right?
Exactly. Everyone brings their own unique perspective and skills to the table. And then, of course, humility is key.
Humility.
Yeah. We need to approach the Bible with a willingness to learn and grow, recognizing that we don't have all the answers. And we should always be wary of interpretations that promote division, hatred, or violence.
The Bible should bring people together, not tear them apart.
Absolutely. And remember, the Bible is a living word.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, it speaks to us in new and relevant ways across cultures and throughout history.
Okay.
But it's up to us to interpret it responsibly and to apply its teachings in a way that promotes justice, compassion, and peace.
Wow, this deep dive has been incredible. We've covered so much ground today, from the importance of literary context to, like, the complexities of interpretation, and even how to avoid misusing the Bible.
It's been a pleasure exploring all this with you.
I feel like I have a whole new appreciation for the Bible now.
That's wonderful to hear. And remember, this is just the beginning. The more we engage with the Bible thoughtfully and humbly, the more it will illuminate our lives and transform our hearts.
So well said. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you've been inspired to keep exploring the Bible with, like, fresh eyes and a deeper understanding. Until next time, keep seeking truth, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.